Welcome to this meeting of the Scrutiny Commission for Charnwood Borough Council. There are a number of things that I would like to remind people of before we start the items on the agenda. Please note that this meeting is being recorded and the recording will be made available on the Council's website following this meeting. Under the Openness of Local Government Bodies regulations, people may film or record this meeting, and this is outside the Council's control. However, people wishing to film or record the meeting should do so in a way that does not disrupt the business of the meeting. Also, so that the meeting is not disturbed, could I ask everyone present to please turn off your mobile phones or switch them to silent and ensure that your environment is distraction free. Thank you. This meeting of the Scrutiny Commission is being held as a hybrid meeting, with some committee members and officers joining the meeting virtually. There is also some people, part of the committee of the Finance and Performance, that are also sitting in and listening to this meeting. So welcome all of you. I will now ask the members if they can see and hear the meeting that are on this committee and watching, taking part virtually. So Councillor Popley.
Our Chair, yes, I can both see and hear the proceedings. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Councillor Harper-Davis, Lead Member of Community Support.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I can see and hear proceedings.
Thank you. Right, we've got item one, which is apologies. And I think there's only one apology at the moment, Councillor Ranson. And I've got Councillor Murphy subbing for Councillor Ranson. Councillor Brooks also gave his apologies, but he may be joining us virtually at some point of the meeting. Item 2, minutes of the previous meeting, which was held on the 14th of November 2022. I'd like to ask members if you confirm that the content and your content to receive the note of the minutes by raising their hands. Thank you. So I will sign those minutes off as exact duplicates of it. Item 3, disclosures of pecuniary interests and other registrable, non-registrable interests, and there hasn't been any. Is there any here? No. Declarations from Party Whip, there is nothing to report from there. And there are no questions under Scrutiny Committee Procedures 11.16. So the first item is item 6, an update on internal antisocial behaviour review. This is on page 12. I'd like to invite Councillor Harper-Davis to introduce the report. And then I'd like to ask Peter then to run through the details. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Good evening all. And thank you to the officers there for the support for the meeting too, because I know Pete Oliver's going to do a presentation. So the ASB was undertaken for several reasons, to review what was working well and that wasn't, to bring together our departments to engage and collaborate to achieve better outcomes in managing primarily our ASB in itself, and to work with police and partners more effectively. Karen Jones, an experienced external consultant, was commissioned to evaluate how we were working, engaging with extensive external stakeholders and other partners. The main focus and scope for the review was managing our ISB and ensuring as a council we work more swiftly and effectively together engaging with offenders. The project, there were three delivery work streams. The first was evaluation of the working practices of the CSP, obviously, which I am the chair. So I was working with our officers and how we could actually improve the way we work in the CSP. And work stream two was reporting and recording, and work stream three was case management. It was really delightful to see. I know the office is going to go through presentation. They do have a presentation, but it was really delightful as a member to see all of the, all of our internal departments working really well together and embracing and sharing best practice. And I don't think we've actually, I certainly haven't seen that before. Everybody was working in their own silos, getting on with the roles that they needed to get on with. But it was really, really nice to see everybody working so collaborative together. And the outcomes of SB were really positive. So I'm actually happy and delighted to hand over to the officers to share the presentation that they have. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Could I just clarify something? I thought I heard you say working with offenders.
It's working to, I can't say catch offenders, it's not really the right phraseology, but it's basically, the offenders that we have from ASB is managing the way we work with them more effectively and the proactive steps that we take.
It's just that I thought I heard you say working with offenders and
I think you probably did, Chair, but I mean working to get the best outcomes offenders.
Thank you. Right, Peter, I'd like to go over. Thank you. I think you've got a presentation for us.
We have. Thank you, Councillor Harper Davies, who successfully completed the background slide for us. So we'll move over that one. Thank you. Did everybody see the?
No, not yet.
No.
Is this here? Share here on the. Apologies, Chair. We will get that.
That's all right.
Okay. Here we go.
It's arranged them better. Whilst we're sorting that out, Peter, I've just underlined this. It says where an independent consultant was commissioned. Is that a usual thing when it's a review that you commission someone, or was it established that you needed somebody outside to review it?
I think we wanted somebody outside to look at it. ASB sits across a number of different services. We wanted somebody to come along, do a wider piece of work, looking at what other organisations were doing, meet with a range of stakeholders on a quasi-independent basis, and then work with everybody to shape what the actual output of the recommendation. So I think it was important that we had that kind of external objective view of things.
Yes, Keith.
Thank you, Chair. You were just yourself, Chair, under the impression that Lee was talking about working with, and I noticed on page 14, the third section of the case management, we're establishing an ASB facilitator role. So I understand that. That person's remit would be to go out on the street and find some people likely to commit and make it easy, give them advice on how to do it well and get rid of them and get away with it.
I think we may have undertaken refinement to the job title, actually.
That's a rather strange title.
I think we did. I think we may have undertaken some refinement. I don't know if you have a look at what we arrived at. We created the post, but I think we had a similar remark, actually. So I think ultimately we have changed the...
I'm just a nitpicking linguist.
Well spotted.
I think you're right to pick it up, because you're not the only person that picked it up either.
Okay,
brilliant. Okay, we've got a presentation on the screen.
Thank you.
Got Alan on the... I think the first thing to say, this was a corporate project as well, with wide involvement with a range of different officers from across the council as well. So a huge amount of input across the organisation has went into this review. I won't cover the background, Councillor Harper Davies has covered it. The first work stream looked at the community safety partnership, but in particular the council's role, because this was an internal review of ASB services, but of course because of the council's involvement with the community safety partnership, it was important that this aspect of the work was considered. So as you're likely aware, the Crime and Disorder Act requires the responsible authorities, and that's not just the council, in the community safety partnership to formulate and implement strategies to tackle crime and disorder in the area. But despite this responsibility being a shared one across agencies, I think it's probably fair to say that a significant volume of the work has sat with the council. Therefore, the focus of this work stream has been to encourage more involvement and input across a range of partners in the CSP. And you can see that some of the key areas of progress reflect that. So there's been a review of the CSP agenda, and that now includes hot topics, sort of agenda items, and the local police commander now presents data from the Office of the Police and Crime Commissioner. There's been a workshop and communication has taken place to ensure all partners are aware of their statutory roles and responsibilities of the CSP. Everybody has a job to play. There's also been more collaboration on producing the Community Safety Partnership Plan 2023 to 2026, an annual strategic assessment. Moving on to work stream two, recording and reporting. This involved a wholesale review around how customers find out about our ASB services, how we present data to them in that respect and information, and how people report antisocial behaviour to us. So we've got new, and we'll have a look at these in a moment, new antisocial behaviour web pages have been completed, along with the development of a new antisocial behaviour guide for customers, and all of our information on our website around ASB is now in one place. We've also got a customer web reporting form and triage process. That means that low-risk cases are identified and deprioritised, and that enables officers to focus on medium and high-risk cases which go into the council's ASB case management system. So here's the front page of the ASB guide. The aim of these pages is to provide information around ASB to customers, around our approach, what customers can do to effort that they can help us to resolve an issue, which agency they can report, should report it to, and that's critical, I'll come back to that in a moment. And if it's an issue we can help with, how to report it to us. You can see, I'm not sure, that we've got a tab for the noise, drug use and dealing, dogs, neighbour disputes, graffiti, bonfires and smokes, assault, intimidation, hate incidents, and vehicle nuisance. I was going to click on the link or plug my laptop in at top in. I think what I'll do is I'll conclude the presentation and then I'll come back to that and we'll plug mine in so we can get the page wrong, given we had a bit of difficulty logging on, getting on in the first place. So we'll move in. Thank you, Alan. You can see from, there's been quite a significant impact of this kind of channel shift and moving things online. Because we now have an online automated process for customers to report ASB, the vast majority of initial data entry is now completed by customers online through the website. I must point out that all of our existing reporting mechanisms, reception, over the telephone, by post, all still exist as well. We've not taken those reporting mechanisms away, we've just encouraged people where they're able to log antisocial behaviour to us on our online system. And that's reduced demand in our contact centre, shifting the method of reporting from telephone to online. So you can see here, this is where it says customer service officer or officer summary, 438 reports over a period were done by customers online, by themselves, logging on to the system. So previously, all of those entries onto our antisocial behaviour system would have been done by the contact centre or ASB officers. So we've shifted the method with which people are reporting, we've reduced demand on our services through that. And as stated earlier, this low-risk antisocial behaviour is now subject to an automated response. So where a customer's report an issue that's very low-level antisocial behaviour, we're giving some information around how they might be able to deal with that and what to do if things escalate. And that means that our antisocial, so we've taken out 96 cases over the period there, that means that our ASB case officers normally would have had to look at that antisocial behaviour case, get in touch with the customer, go for a risk assessment, all of that things. They're now able to focus on medium and high risk cases, not the low risk ASB.
Sorry, could I just ask you again, so they report a low risk,
yeah,
and how does somebody contact them?
Yeah, where it's low risk,
yeah,
they get an automated response,
automated response by
email or written correspondence. Okay, so moving on to work stream three, case management. So at the core of effective antisocial behaviour case management is the risk assessment process. It's the risk assessment undertaken by the antisocial behaviour officer or practitioner that drives the action that's taken. Areas of focus have therefore been on the creation of a clear risk assessment process and guidance for officers, training the case management managing officers, a review of and development of new internal risk management structures, and use of data to manage risk. Looking at the new risk assessment processing guidance, this work stream is aimed to equip officers with the tools, the clear guidance and the knowledge to undertake effective risk assessments. So we've got a new risk assessment process, and that process, so officers go through a risk assessment, and it considers things like repeat victimisation, vulnerability of the victim, whether or not the incident's hate-related, because that would escalate the risk. It also considers aspects around cuckooing, the impact of the antisocial behaviour on health and family members. That information, that scored risk assessment, is then combined with data that we hold on our systems, existing history, victim perception, so a conversation with the victim around how they've been affected by it, but also the officer's professional judgment, and the officer is then able to allocate a level of risk to the case, so be it low, medium or high. So that's a detailed practitioner risk assessment. We've told officers how we want them to do that, and that means that we'll get consistency in terms of how cases are risk assessed. We've also got built into the guidance and process mandatory actions that must be taken where cases reach a certain level. So if a case is high risk, there's an immediate consideration of urgent use of legal tools and powers. There's the victim must be referred to victim support. A multi-agency problem-solving plan must be put in place within 10 days. The case is to be referred to the Partnership Joint Action Group, and the lead officer's line manager is to be notified. We've also delivered some training for case managing officers. We've had a refresher on ASB tools and powers, a training session on the use of Sentinel, which is our ASB case management system, and some training on risk management. I think it's important to say it's a bit of a starting point for us, because as part of this, you know, as part of this, we've had a conversation with officers, and we have identified further training needs, which is something we'll be taking forward as well. We've also looked at our internal risk management structure. So we've established, this is set up and running, a new strategic ASB group internally to continue the work started through the ASB review. I just mentioned training. Training is one of the things that group's looking at to further develop services. That's attended by myself, Alan, the head of regulatory and community safety, Katie, the head of strategic housing, and other relevant service managers as well. So along with policy and service development, that group will act as an escalation point for the existing internal ASB and enforcement of. That's more of a kind of casework, internal casework problem solving meeting, and it provides an upward escalation point if they were concerned about something. Finally, mentioned it already, not changed it, it has changed the name, but ASB facilitated post on. A new post has been created in the establishment to support the use of data from the prevention and management of ASB, and that post will be recruited to over the coming months. In terms of key benefits achieved to date, Councillor Harper-Davies said it right at the beginning, bringing all of the services together to work on it, and the social behaviour together to improve services to the benefit of customers. Closer working relationships and understanding of statutory requirements in relation to the CSP. Improved customer experience through the new reporting mechanism in ASB toolkit. A reduction in officer time, as proven in relation to ASB implicator input. Officers are now able to focus on medium and high risk cases without having to deal with low risk. An updated risk assessment process, an enhanced training programme to reinforce officer knowledge, and a clear internal escalation process is being developed. So concludes the presentation. I think what we'll do is if we'll try and plug in, and we'll see if we can have a quick look at the new ASB pages, if that's
fine, thank you.
It'll take a moment. Hopefully a slightly less painful experience getting it on the screen. But we can abandon if it's too problematic. I think this is probably more of an enhancement than a requirement.
Whilst you're doing that, I'll welcome Councillor Brooks. Can you see and hear the proceedings?
Yes, I can, Councillor Seaton.
Thank you
very much.
I'm so pleased it's not just me that stares at the screen. I think, well, what should I do?
It's not having it, is it?
You almost want a big arrow to say press here.
We'll give it another go. the same thing again, aren't they?
Will you be sending those slides?
I think what we'll do, if people, my intention was just to have a look at the website, but that's something that that's something people do in their own time.
Yeah.
What I'd encourage them to do is there's a couple of things that you can look at. You can click on where there's the, I think, where there's the little, if you go onto the council's, well, it's charnwood.gov.uk/pages/ASB guide, should be fairly straightforward to find, or you can click on the link that's in the circulated in the presentation, and that will take you through to the reporting pages, and you can click on those little headings, have a look at the information that we're providing for customers, and then if you want to, you can also click on the report ASB link as well, and that will just show you the start of the new online reporting system as well for reporting into social behaviour.
Okay.
And the other thing to say is as well is that if a customer's reporting antisocial behaviour to you, I would direct them to the ASB guide, and I would direct if they're able to, if they're able to use the internet, and I would direct them as well to have a look at the guide, and then actually they can enter the details onto the system themselves. And many of the questions are about how the victim or the person reporting feels as well. So it's important that they're able to complete that, and then the record will come through to us.
Okay. Thank you, Councillor Parton.
Collins. Councillor Hamilton was first.
No, you'd put your hand up prior. So.
Fair enough. I've got quite a few questions, that's all.
64.
You wouldn't be sad if you hadn't.
I might as well just start with this one. I'm just pretending to report something online, and it's given me the option for me to be anonymous, which I've waived. But then it says details of the person you're reporting on behalf of, and it doesn't seem to give an option to leave them anonymous, because often, especially like tenants who are perhaps elderly, will call me and say, can you do it for me? But I don't know how I would not put their details in.
Okay, the person reporting on behalf of somebody else wishes to remain anonymous. I think that's, but it's not providing the option to do that. Is that is that the point?
Okay. Yeah.
Well, we can take it away and have a look.
Yeah, could you? Because that's one of the big, I don't know what other councillors get, but that's what I get. You know, people say, well, can you do it for me? You know, in their 80s, and then they've opposite somebody that's, they're saying is dealing drugs. The last thing they want is me putting their name and address on the website and saying, this lady's reported this.
I'd encourage them to report it to the police if it is drugs in the first instance.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I am assuming that when it comes through to the website to Charnwood, it's completely confidential anyway, and you wouldn't share who it was that reported it in the first place.
There's information that we would share with other statutory agencies for safeguarding reasons as well.
Alan?
Yeah, just not on that particular point, but in terms of an anonymous sort of person wanting to complain, what we've set up really is to say that obviously we can take the details, record an incident, but actually from an actionable point of view, it's going to be very difficult for us to action that if the person is anonymous. We'd have to compare with other reports we're getting and whether we can substantiate the actual problem and reporting back. So we've built that into it, so it gives us a bit more robust sort of information to come forward.
So it does back it up. If I want to remain anonymous, it will tell me that by remaining anonymous, these things will happen or not happen.
Yeah. It'll go through that process to say what we
I know it'll go through the process, but does it explain it to me?
Yeah.
That, you know, even if you do put your name and address down, it won't go any further, and it allows us to contact
the confidentiality of it, yes.
So that is all explained. Thank you. Ted, I counted that as one question. Where's the other 81?
60.
Okay.
honestly,
Colin,
it's number bingo.
No, you've missed it now, Colin.
No. The one of the things that I really welcome this, because you see, over a period of 2 to 3 years, I've been asking various officers what the status of this this review was. Now, it's worth pointing out that of all the officers I contacted, many of them have left us as a result of the restructure across the council, and the officers here today aren't the people that didn't reply to me. But it was disappointing that for 2-3 years I was contacting officers asking for more information and just getting nothing back. So, but I'll repeat, it's not the officers here. You know, they've been excellent. But the something that I've sort of bedeviled me over the years is some of these things are so cloaked in mystery. Things like, for example, as a member trying to get information on the CSP and the JAG, and then trying to work out the difference between the two, and then who is on them. And then you've got things like review of partners' feedback, and you think, I wonder who these partners are. You know, we work with different agencies, you know, who are they? So I was wondering, because the members did have a training session with on ASB, but it was with a lady who was brought in who works with councils across the country to deliver a training session on ASB. I wondered whether you'd be against holding a early next year, before the end of the 4-year cycle, a training session to go into this in more detail, because, you know, this is great, but I would still leave here tonight thinking, well, who is on the CSP? Who is on the JAG? And, for example, the areas of development, it's written in such operational speak. Empowering operational officers to make project decisions. You're thinking, well, who were these and who overturned the decisions? It's all these sort of things that, at the moment, I just have to go on trust.
Is that anything you can come back on, Alan?
Okay. Thank you, Chair. In terms of the Community Safety Partnership, as part of this project as well, we did improve the website to outline Community Safety Plan and the partners involved in that. More than happy to, we're in the process of developing a draft Community Safety Plan and working with partners to undertake that and finalise that and look at our priorities moving forward. So I think that's probably a key time when we develop that draft plan to perhaps talk to members and sort of highlight that to members what's happening in terms of the development of that draft plan. So I'm happy to take that, Chair, and look at that as part of that development of the plan.
Yeah, and then I think finally for now then, Chair, it does speak about, and Councillor Harris mentioned this, the facilitator. It does say that the facilitator can liaise with members, and I wondered when we would know who this person is, who will sort of work with us.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Yeah, I mean, once we've obviously appointed somebody, because we've got to go through that process, then we can liaise with members as part of that training as well, and inform members of the process, who they can liaise with moving forward. But we haven't, that's an area for improvement, shall I say, and it's one area we will develop and then look at bringing that forward so that members will know who to report through to or to liaise with, shall I say, Chair. Because obviously they can still report things through in terms of ASB, but actually liaising with an officer. So yes, we'll take that forward, Chair.
Thank you. Councillor Harper-Davis.
Thank you, Chair. Is in response to Councillor Parton's questions about the CSP partners, Councillor Parton, our statutory partners, which is the same for every CSP, are fire, Leicester County Council, District Councils, Police, Health, Probation Service, us as a council, and the university. They're the statutory partners, so they will always be part and parcel of the CSP. But obviously in some situations we would engage with such Turning Point, or we would liaise with the Vulcan Centre. So it's their statutory partners, but it doesn't mean to say that we can't and don't work with other partners as well. So they're the statutory ones for CSP. From a JAG perspective, I don't think it's any, I think it's misguided, Councillor Parton, to think there's any cloak and daggers because they're on. I think JAG is a little bit different. Councillor Taylor and I sat in on one JAG when I joined as lead member some while ago. Obviously from a JAG perspective, because they're discussing particular cases, they are confidential from a GDR perspective. So obviously when they came on to discuss certain cases, and I suspect that the police and as a council, we work with PEP, who's our main safeguarding officer around JAG, to discuss specific cases. And when I said earlier about working with offenders, often these JAG, we have like a young JAG, young people's JAG, and obviously an adult JAG. But I mean, the staff members won't be confidential, but obviously the people they discuss will be. So I can promise you there's nothing hidden there at all, Ted. It's very transparent. It's just that from a JAG perspective, we wouldn't necessarily know who we're discussing. So, but they're the statutory policy. I hope that helps anyway. Thank you.
Going by his scowl at the moment, it probably didn't help, but Ted, what, did you want to come back on that?
Where is there any information on the JAG?
There isn't. There's no information here on the JAG.
It
assumes that you already know who is in the joint action group.
Well, but that's the point, you see.
Not who.
Yeah.
Because there's no need to know individual names, but the partners that take part in
the
that.
Partners. I don't know who the partners are.
It's mainly police, isn't it, Lee Harper Davis?
Yeah. It will be. I suspect, Chair, it will be social services.
Social work.
And rap, you know, when we get these difficult, I don't want to say offenders, or I'll say offenders, or people who are constantly getting into trouble, let's say, then they also have, like, they'll have a wraparound group of people which will try and put these people on the right track. So I'm not sure myself who all those partners are, but if you dropped Pet, I'm not sure whether Pete or Alan might know, but you know, if you just have to send an email to Pep, and he will let you know what partners are engaged with our more difficult individuals in the borough.
Okay, well, just final point then, to say that it seems like I'm being difficult, but to the point about being, I use the term cloaked in mystery. On several occasions over the last 10 years, I've tried to contact the CSP through Democratic Services, and, you know, with big issues in Southfields, which normally involves sort of transient noise and house noise with students and a lot of drug dealing. And in almost every single occasion, I've given up and I've just gone to the police and asked them to submit it. But I never hear anything subsequently back about how it was progressed. So I just basically just use the police as a conduit now.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ted. Councillor Hamilton.
I'm
introducing Councillor Hamilton because asking him, although he does want to comment on it, but Councillor Hamilton was going to chair a panel on antisocial behaviour, but obviously this review was in the pipeline. So you did have conversations with officers about it, didn't you, Councillor?
Yes, because it's obviously one of the key concerns for members. It's kind of very much a hot button topic, and it always is. Would it be useful? You've gone through what the review, the output of this review was, and that's been useful in what you've done. Could you just remind us what was there beforehand? So what's the key changes? But, and also within the context that, considering that one of the key the focus of this was to ensure that the council takes swifter action against offenders with more civil penalties, has it actually achieved that, or can you begin to see it achieving swifter action?
Yeah, okay. Right. In terms of Sheriff,
I've made. I've got to apologise as well for my cough. Okay. Sorry. Yes.
In terms of kind of what was there before, I think I probably contextualised the work around the CSP, I presume adequately, that the intention was to actually get more involvement from the partners. In respect of the reporting and recording. I'll start off with the website. Information relating to antisocial behaviour was dispersed, I think it's probably the best thing to say, across the council's website under a number of headings. So some of it was some under landlord services, some under environmental protection, some under street management. So what we've done is we've put it together all into one place, pretty much on the slide that you can see there before it. Customers had, when they were reporting it to us, well, not, you know, there was an option to report online, but generally speaking, I think it's probably fair to say the vast majority of customers were picking up the phone and giving us a ring. And then what would happen, and the process was different across services, so the systems used to capture that data were not necessarily consistent across all of the services, so we put one into sort of a cleaner mechanism, you know, for reporting them that applies to all service areas. What was also there before is that certainly in the landlord service, which was, you know, the service I had primary responsibility for at the time, is that somebody would ring up about an antisocial behaviour case. I don't know, I'll step that back a little bit. Somebody would make a report of something they perceived to be antisocial behaviour, you know, next door's cat, for example, found in the front garden. And that would create an antisocial behaviour case. That antisocial behaviour case would come to one of my officers, who probably had a lot of high-risk cases to do. They would then need to pick up the telephone to that customer, whatever, get in contact with them, undertake a risk assessment, talk to that customer, fill out the details that are mandatory fields on our antisocial behaviour system before closing it down. Now, even if you take out a conversation with the customer and stuff, just filling in that administrative process was hard work. And when you've got cases that arguably, that's like high-risk cases, where you might need to seek an injunction, taking possession of a property, or you might be looking to close a property, and the pressure's on with legal timescales, all of this additional administration is extremely difficult to deal with. So we've taken out that low-risk reporting, and now if somebody reports an issue that, to us that's low-risk, and is assessed as low-risk through the system, an automated response goes out, so we've taken all of that away. In terms of risk assessment, and I said that's a key thing, it was on one of the slides, I won't try and put it back in, but officers had to select what they thought the level of risk was. So you'd have like a normal risk grid, and it's got a little 5x5 grid, likelihood, impact. They just have to select a cell, and then they have to write, you know, what the justification was. Of course, there's nothing really that sat behind that. So what we've got now is we've got a system, a series of questions that the officer has to respond to, like a form to fill out, and that then churns out the risk rating. Because what we were seeing cases that were arguably high risk, where officers were maybe not putting it in the right box, or, you know, the officers were assessing things in different ways. There's always going to be a degree of professional judgment, but what we've put now is a mandatory process for officers to go to arrive or give a very strong indication of a risk rating. So we've looked to get consistency. We also, I think it's probably fair to say, didn't have as much joint working across the various departments as we did previously. So I think that the new, you know, the review itself, as Councillor Hopper quite rightly set out, has brought services together. We've now got a new kind of cross-service board as well that's looking at antisocial behaviour as a collaborative way across the organisation. So I think they're the main changes in summary. There was a second part to your question, I can't remember what it was.
It's about whether it's actually achieved the aim of making swifter action against offenders.
I think it's freed up officers in their ability to take more action against offenders and deal faster with medium and high risk cases. I've not looked at whether the people, you know, we can look at case open, case closed timescales and things like that, see whether it's shrunk down. But certainly from what I've seen, the capacity has been released. And that's evidence for sure.
Okay, thanks for that. Just a few clarifications, really. You're talking about the low risk now is almost a kind of an automated process. However, in page 13, you talk about low risk treat as an ended process. And it says, includes chasing evidence and closing relevant cases where they cannot be progressed. What do you mean by cannot be progressed?
Yeah, where information is not forthcoming from the customer. So generally what happens is the automated advice goes out to the customer asking them, you know, what they need to do in respect to antisocial behaviour. And then if they reported it back to us again, but this time with some more information and evidence, and what happens is our system then picks up that this is a repeat case. So the system looks back into the data and escalates the risk level of the risk level of that case.
Okay, and then some terms here. So you talk about review opportunities from the implementation of Northgate over the coming months. Northgate?
Yes, well done, thank you.
Yeah, so Northgate, see, from regulatory services in environmental health and licensing, we've got a back office system we're updating in conjunction with planning as well. So Northgate's our back office system, and what we want to make sure is that obviously that links in with Sentinel, which is the ASB case management system, as and when required, because what we're trying to do is make sure that Sentinel is the ASB case management system for medium and high risk cases, so we're not flooding Sentinel with all kinds of different cases that we are managing in the right way, and other agencies can see that information. So what we've got is the potential for integrating Northgate at some point with Sentinel as well for those medium and high risk cases. So what we're trying to do is make sure we concentrate on these cases that need officers' attention, because the potential risks to individuals, I think, is key to this as we move forward. Because we can't tackle everything. We can help people to help themselves, and then moving on from there where we need to, and there's a high risk or a medium risk, we can start our intervention work as necessary. So that's Northgate's our the environmental health back office system. Yeah, that covers a multitude of different things, not just noise, not just that, but other things like pest control as well, and other things that come into that. So it's not just those kind of cases.
Okay. Yeah. So thanks for that. And just a couple of things. Clarifications. Now, you might have mentioned this, the review of the CSB terms of reference, that was maybe down for September 22. That is now complete now, is it?
Chair?
Yeah.
We're undertaking that review, because what we're dovetailing that with a new community safety plan that should be implemented next year. So we've already drafted some draft terms of reference, and in January's CSP meeting, we're looking at approving those terms of reference, which will then move forward for the draft CSP plan that we're going to approve, and then move it forward. Because obviously we need updated terms of reference to make sure the dovetailing with the new plan and the priorities that we're working and the partners involved in that. So what we're trying to make as well in terms of reference, the CSP, is make it a bit more simpler, so that, you know, we can bring in partners as necessary, and bring in other organisations as necessary, and can deal with our priorities through the CSP without changing the terms of reference all the time. So we're trying to future-proof them as such.
Thank you. Just a couple of minor ones that you talk about in page 19, a follow-up action of provide a councillor update on the new structure and powers in each team. Is this it? Or is it something you're going to, is it going to be a training session for all councillors, because all councillors are really interested in ASB?
Thank you Chair. I mean, this is one part of it. We have updated HMAB as well, so the Housing Management Board as well, as part of that process. And what we want to do is update councils as well. I did, Councillor Barton was talking about it. You know, when we've completed the plan as well, try and update members on the plan, the CSP work, and some of this work as well. So there's the reporting mechanisms as well in that, so it updates members of that, which will be either through the training sessions, or the councillor briefings as well that go out as well. So we're going to try and build that in. We are discussing it at this strategic group that Peter mentioned earlier on, and we are discussing that and how we roll that out for members.
Right, it feels like a training session would be really useful, I think, to walk members through all this
complicated
be there and ask questions. I think the last one that might be, if you see, a 3 month post review has also been recommended to track success review live actions. When did this 3 month post review take place, or is it?
It's concluded.
From May 2022, so the work is still ongoing of what's actually been concluded. Okay, that's it.
Chair, can just come in on that point? Just for your benefit from that, it was concluded, but obviously we don't just stop there. You know, some of the ongoing actions were put into the strategic group for us to monitor and manage and move forward. So it doesn't just stop, that's it. We are ongoing with those kind of improvement works.
Okay, so thank you. Thank you for that.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Just one question, really. As a councillor, someone rings me up and they said they've reported an ASB to Charnwood. They've gone through it all and that, and then they're not getting the satisfaction that they think they ought to get. And obviously, as a councillor, we triage it as well. And if it's the cat pooing in the front garden, then, you know, we will try to, obviously that's not antisocial behaviour, that's not, it's part of life. So we'll triage it as well. But is there somebody that we can just get in touch with? Just a one person to get in touch with, just to find whether a case is progressing or has been stopped? Because sometimes people that do complain to us don't actually give us the full story, and they don't say that Charnwood has got in touch with us and told us there's nothing they can do about it because of A, B and C. So obviously they've not told us that, so they just say Charnwood are ignoring me. I would like to then be able to ring somebody up and say, are you ignoring them? Has it reached a conclusion? And what is that conclusion?
It's not one particular person at this point in time. I think what we'd given some consideration to was the ASB facilitator. the initial point of contact. But what I would say is I would see that more as a kind of, you know, point of contact, and then fielding that to the correct, you know, the correct department in order for them to deal with, because that section would be closest to the management of that ASB case, rather than kind of having another person in the, you know, another person in the triangle that's unnecessary. But I would suggest if there's an ASB case that you did want an update, I would follow the normal member inquiry channels, and you know, you can direct to the head of service in the first instance.
Yeah,
you know, really okay. In my past role, I've not had a huge amount of, you know, occasionally, you know, one of my colleagues in community, the head of community safety, say, hey, I've had this inquiry, but it's one of yours. But I've never seen a huge amount of kind of confusion in terms of, where should things go. So a head of service, if it does so happen, it sits in another department, ping it to the colleague to deal with.
Okay. Right. Any more questions from anybody?
Yes,
still.
Please.
Thank you. No more questions. Ted, did you have one?
I did. Yeah, I did. It was a clarification question. You'd ringed the in your presentation, Peter. You'd ringed hate crime in Red and said, well, that would obviously escalate it. Now, I can think of an instance this week where somebody's told me about something that's live in Southfields where it was technically a hate incident. The thing was that this individual was not disabled, was quite young and healthy, but was BAME. Then I can think of people who are, you know, poor mobility in their 80s, who are maybe not BAME, and if they're living opposite a sort of a drug dealer or something, or some really bad ASB, you know, people trying to climb in through next door's window in the middle of the night for drugs, is that person not given equal weight?
Depends on the circumstances.
Yeah, exactly.
Both cases to be high risk.
Yeah. I just wanted clarification on that. Yeah.
I think I missed the whole point of that question, Ted, to be quite honest. No, that's fine. The answer, so That's fine. Right, so we note this and welcome it, and I would like to come back here. If I say in 6 months' time, that's going to be after the elections, and I think then the new councillors or whatever, it would sit quite happily then. So review in 6 months' time. We have come up with two things, like change the word of the facilitator. Change that, please. If you are a wording guru, probably you could come up with a word for it. A nice one.
Just a process between the two, hasn't it?
And there was something else. Yeah. I know there was something else, and I didn't write it down.
Training chair.
Well, training for us, yes, but there was something
else.
To
check the position in respect of the anonymity of the person reporting on behalf of.
That's it. Thank you very much. I didn't write it down.
I did have another go, and I couldn't do it.
No. Okay. So, thank you very much for that presentation. Thank you very much, Councillor Harp Davis, for attending, and your first report. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Pete. Thank you, Alan.
You sound like me,
I don't feel real. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Bye.
Right, so the next item for discussion is item 7, and it's for void property information, and it's on page 21 of your agenda. I'd like to ask Councillor Mercer to introduce the report. And then it's over to Pete again. It's your night tonight then, Peter. So, Councillor Mercer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is not the first time we've discussed voids, and after this you have 143 days left to ask me again if you're not happy this time. it's obviously not a good situation, but it's been caused by a combination of unfavourable circumstances, not least COVID. And a lot of the sheltered voids, there's about 140 of them, are unlikely ever to be let. And we're working on a strategy, which we'll be bringing forward at the beginning of next year, to work harder through these. And as an example, St. Michael's Court, where we have 19 voids, and these are bed sits which are not particularly pleasant, and you have to share a bathroom down and toilet down a corridor, and the people understandably don't want to go there. That's being replaced by a redevelopment of 8 bungalows, so we're slowly working through those. There's also then voids in repair. There will always be voids in repair because there's always going to be a degree of churn. But as a consequence of COVID, there's a lot of pressure on resources as operatives work through the big backlog that has been caused by COVID. And also the labour market is very challenging, as anybody who tries to get a builder or anybody, a plumber, or anybody to an electrician, anybody to repair work these days, it's hard getting people to find people to do the work because there's so much to be done. And so action has been taken to bring performance back on track. And I'm quite pleased that I've discussed this numerous times with our former head of private sector housing to actually get the number down, and there has been a reduction in the overall number of voids, and I'm fairly confident that the rate at which it will get down will improve now with Joe Tomlinson mobilising to work on the major voids. So from a more positive point of view, the number that have been made ready to let this year is back to what we had in pre-pandemic levels. So we're back to the same rate of working through the backlog that had been built up, and the allocations resource, as Pete will be able to explain in more detail if members of the committee are interested, has actually been increased from per week to just over 102 over the past 6 weeks. Although obviously it will take a little time to to train people and to get them up to speed. But I'm quite happy to ask any questions on policy, and Peter will be able to, I hope, answer questions on detail.
Thank you very much. At this stage, I'd like to welcome comments from Mark Charles, who was the chair of the Finance Committee, who asked for this to be brought here. I don't know whether, Mark, you've got any questions or any particular queries at the moment.
Thank you, Chair. I wasn't expecting to be asking questions, but however, I think it's interesting, and I know this does keep being brought up again and again, and I think members are very keen to sort of address the situation, and I welcome Councillor Mercer's report. I think we're sort of looking at maybe linking this in now. Obviously, there's quite an underspend on the HRA budget, and also the other budgets that we've been looking at. And really, it is a big issue, I think. And I think there is big problems as how we actually address it, how we get the workforce, you know, and you know, the sort of timescales that we're looking at. I think it's also interesting to, I'd be very interested to hear the plan to actually deal with some of these properties that we can't re-let, they're not suitable. Because obviously, we should be looking at that as something that could be a positive, whether we can, you know, do something with those properties, move them on or whatever, I'm not entirely sure. But I welcome Councillor Mercer's report, and, you know, I look forward to seeing some progress made on this. I do believe we are looking to review it again on finance informs in March. So hopefully we'll continue with an upward trajectory. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Charles. Before I go to you, please, if I could ask a few questions that have arisen from this. Now, Councillor Mercer did say you're back up to the levels now of voids as pre-COVID, but whilst COVID was going on, the levels of voids were better than they are now, or pre-COVID. So I'm not quite sure how those made it look better or not, because to me, they're not. Okay, we've got back to the same level, but it's the high level, whereas in COVID, it was a lot lower. It's 213 in 21-22. So the question, first of all, is 130 voids not likely to let, was told. And I have asked the question before, Peter, is one, if we can sell those, or the ones that needed major works done to them, do we do sums and work out how much it would cost us to renovate it and how much we could get if we sold it, and how much of that money can we keep? Because I seem to remember back in the dim distant future, past future, that we are not allowed to keep all of the money from selling a council house, a council property. So obviously that goes into the sum as well as what we can keep and what we can't keep. Or that might be just a perception we got at the time. So if you could clarify that for me. The other question is on the list of voids. What does a waiting shortlist mean? We've got 50 of those, 50 odd. That are ready to let, ready to rock and roll. Nobody's objecting to them. They're all fine and hunky-dory. They're all advertised and a waiting shortlist. But some of them have been like that since July 2021, on the first one. So if you could just explain what a waiting shortlist means as well. Thank you very much.
Yeah, certainly. Okay, in respect of the first point, the pandemic caused a backlog of repairs, and then our resource in voids was part of, you know, some of our resource in voids was then pulled over to deal with that backlog. So that didn't help the situation. So that was the first point. In respect of sale, I think that if we split the stock broadly into two categories, short accommodation for older people, and then general needs.
Mm-hmm.
In respect of sheltered accommodation, of course we have a number of blocks of sheltered accommodation. There are people living in those blocks of accommodation. And of course, so what we need to do is consider the options in respect of those as to how, you know, as to what the housing need is overall, and then where we can deliver improvements to sheltered accommodation. And actually sale is only one of those potential options. There are a number of other options as well.
But we do consider that as an option.
Yes, yes. And I think when we bring the paper forward in respect of St Michael's Court, you will see that sale of the land was considered as an option as well. Of course, if we were to sell the asset, the land in that particular instance, then that would have prohibited us from actually using it to meet housing, our housing need. So that's a recommendation in respect to that. In respect of general needs accommodation, the reason I said it was generally exceptional is because there is demand for our housing stock within the housing waiting list. Some relatively high numbers on there. I think we would consider, and we have got a couple of properties in the frame at the moment, we would consider sale of the property where there was a significant structural issue, for example, that actually would be really expensive to do, and actually probably carries a degree of risk, presently for the council in respect of, the impact perhaps of the structural, the structural faults on surrounding properties and things like that. So yes, we do consider. And we are considering sale of particular properties, but it is the exception.
And we've not done that. Have we done it before?
Not in recent memory that I can recall, although I've not,
Why is there a reluctancy to do that?
I think because generally speaking, we've got a housing need, and actually if we can, reasonably, remedy and repair a property, then we will do it in order to meet.
But we are sorry to interrupt, we are buying things on the open market anyway to replace that.
Yes.
So we're getting rid of something that's got a risk, an element of risk, but buying something that's
less risk.
Less risk.
Less risk, yeah. And what you will see as well brought forward over the next, early next year, through the Housing Management Advisory Board, also through to Cabinet, is an exercise that we've recently done looking at the performance of our assets. So what that exercise does, it looks at which assets are performing well, financially, economically, and socially as well,
mm-hmm.
and also look at those assets that are costing us, not performing as well. So we could use that to inform a disposal strategy. So as properties become void, and then we could look to dispose of them, and potentially to inform an acquisitions or development strategy as well. We could look to use that information to target, purchases in those areas that actually, where we know properties are performing well, where the properties are performing well, based on condition. Condition would come into that too. In respect of if you sell a property through the right to buy, then you're correct. We cannot hang on to all of the money. I believe that when we dispose of a property, and we do have to notify disposals to government, I believe we can retain the. But I would need to check that point and clarify that to you. I'm not 100%, so I'd need to come back on that. I think your final query was around a waiting shortlist. And this links into the issue around insufficient allocations officers and insufficient allocations resource. Because what's happened is that the property essentially sit there exactly as you described, waiting to be allocated. So not too long ago, we had, I think as Councillor Mercer pointed out, 0.8, I think, allocations officers in post at the moment. And we've increased that resource significantly, and we're looking to increase it further as well. So I think we've got really 102 hours worth of officers in there, officer time in there at the moment. Of course, those officers we're just training them, so it's going to take a little bit of time.
Right, okay.
And that's a general point as well, in that this is quite a big ship to turn from a performance perspective. You can see, hopefully, from the report that we've done a lot of stuff on the repairs side,
mm-hmm.
and it's only put new contractors in place, but additional resources, paid overtime, and taken lots of measures. And it's only over the past couple of months that the number of voids in repair has we had about 150. It's dropped to 128 as we are today. I checked with the repairs team leader before I came. We've got another big contractor coming on board, and I think it's only when we have that additional capacity it will start to come down. But a lot of work's gone into that, so it's been quite a big ship to turn, is the analogy. I think on the allocation side, we we've had a look at, that as well. I think to start getting through that backlog, it is going to take time. It's going to take, it's going to take months, I think. And I can understand that scrutiny wants to look at this in further detail. So I'd be happy to, we've got rigorous performance information. We're looking at a sort of weekly basis, and I'd be happy to bring that back to scrutiny as well to provide a regular update on the position.
I mean, just looking at that, it's the lack of staff. Is primarily what you're saying. It's the lack of staff that's waiting shortlists on there. So you've got, okay, in the scheme of things, 50 houses isn't that many, but it is to those 50 families waiting for a house. Mm-hmm. And the majority of them I know are bed sits, but you've got three-bedroomed houses there and two-bedroomed houses as well. So why have we only just started employing staff and still going through the training? Why did we not? We knew this was here. As Councillor Mercer pointed out, we've gone over and over and over about the voids. So why is it only now that we've actioned and employing more people?
I didn't have responsibility to that part of the service previously, so I can't answer in full. What I can say is that when I met with colleagues to have a look at what was going on with the pipeline, I think it was pretty much September where we started actively trying to get more resource in there as well. Right. But I couldn't comment fully to the position prior to taking on that area of service.
Thank you. And sorry, I've took up probably some of your presentation now. So if you would like to talk us through, or if there are any questions. Yes, so
I wasn't minded to say anything further than I've already said.
No, already right. Sorry about that. Is there any question? Are there any questions, Councillor Barton?
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I did some rudimentary maths because I counted the all of these listed here. I came up with 386. And you took away the 140 sheltered accommodation. Then there's age discretionary 96, and that takes you to 236. So, as you correctly said, 150. So you're saying that's dropped to about 128 now.
In repair, yeah. Yeah, repair. Yeah.
Now, what one recommendation I wanted to humbly suggest was that in the report, it talks about how you're looking to reduce the, there we are, it's the very last paragraph. It says monitoring, weekly monitoring is taking place by a cross-service voids group. The council strategic leadership team is monitoring performance monthly. So therefore it would seem, I know if this seems a ridiculous idea to actually have some KPIs put in, if you're confident you've got workmen coming in, to be able to start saying, okay, well, we're going to try and reduce it by X number a month. By quarter one, we'll have reduced it down to this. This is a acceptable number at any given time to have. And then you've got your KPIs for, because currently it doesn't look as if, well, certainly in this report, that you've got any sort of real KPIs to say this is what we want to drop it down to.
Yeah, yeah. I think on the repair side as well, one of the things is, well, actually I'll start with allocations because that's slightly easier. I think that's an easier metric to get to because we can calculate, and I've done it already, it's an easier metric to get to because it's the number of voids that come through from the repairs team into allocations, yeah, and the allocations team needs to be letting more than are passed over from the repairs team in order to start clearing the backlog of ready-to-let properties. Does that make sense?
Okay.
And you can apply a metric to that, so you can say each allocations officer, for example, can undertake four shortlists a day, which translate into three confirmed lets, because of course not every shortlist an offer is there. So you can apply a metric to that. And I did write to the allocations team leader earlier this week to set out a proposed because I'm looking to do exactly what you've suggested, to set out what might be an appropriate target for the number of lets per week for the team to aim towards when officers are fully trained, to get a reduction in the overall number of voids. So at the moment, I'm tracking on a week by week basis. We currently track, and we've got a lot of performance data. Happy to share that with you. On a week by week basis, we track the number of voids in repair, the number of voids that are in standard repair, major repair, the number of voids that we've got coming through as well, the net, you know, the overall total number of voids. And it's only, last week and this week is the first 2 weeks we've seen in a very long time we've actually stopped the number of voids increasing. So I think that shows that all of the things that we've done here is starting to, it's starting to make a difference. I was hoping beyond hope that this week it would have dropped, and I could have told you that we started to reduce it. It's parallel. So I'll be happy to provide a metric to you in respect of respective targets.
Yeah. I mean, what I did was, obviously each councillor knows their area intimately, and there's a detailed knowledge of it. So what I did, I went with a marker pen through this and found all the south fields, and I was trying to trace two properties in particular that I know have been void for a long time, and because I live in the area, daily I think, there's somebody in there today doing some work. And there was one in particular that said that it's if you want to look at it, it's on page 30, it's at the very top. It says, general needs, house, two bed, void since 26 October 2020. And it says, major repairs outsourced, major works needed. So if I was sort of like, a member of the public, or a journalist or something, that they perhaps might say, how come since autumn 2020 we've not been able to find a contractor to be able to do that? And maybe was it a case of that is one that should have been earmarked to be as a high risk to be let go? Or is there I'm not asking for an answer on specific ones. I'm making a point here that it was too high a risk, but it's worth something to the council to keep. So we're going to keep trying to get this one back in. But obviously, we're close to 2023 now. So
yeah.
There'll be a very, very small number of properties in here, a relatively small number of properties that require structural works and monitoring. So some properties maybe if the tenant has moved out, we've been monitoring the structural position, so I couldn't re-let it on that basis. But I think generally, putting those ones aside, I believe generally these properties are suitable for re-let. There's a realistic prospect of getting work done and getting them let. We wouldn't want to be putting them on the open market.
Okay. Any more questions?
Just one, and would you be so kind as to insufficient demand due to age criteria? Now, again, if I was pretending to not be a councillor and look at this, and I saw this list and it said general needs 60 plus bungalow, and then insufficient demand due to criteria, I was under the impression that people wanting bungalows, they would, it was a land grab. They were desperate for them. So I was... And then coming back to my sort of council knowledge, the amount, if I had a pound for every time someone over retirement age has said, I'd love a bungalow. So, when I read insufficient demand due to age criteria, it's sort of rather confusing.
Yeah, I think we have seen reduced demand for some of those properties. One of the things that we're looking to do is to lower the age criteria for properties as well.
That just seems incredible. I mean, I'm not disagreeing with you.
We have seen some reduced demand for
that. It just seems incredible. I'm staggered.
But, I mean, we've got a a property in Thurmaston that had a reduced age criteria, and it's not worked terribly well, and a lot of those residents that were there, because they were of a certain age, have gone now because of another element has gone into the housing. So by losing its age-related scheme, it's reversed it all, and you know, the one-bedroom accommodation, and the elderly people that were there now have left. Instead of, say, that bungalow, I don't know where it was or whatever, age-related, could it be also for, you know, there's a lot of 40-year-olds that have got chronic arthritis that can't go up the stairs as well. So instead of it being age-related, could it be physically related? You know what I mean? So that could be the criteria. So what do you have to do to remove the age limit on something?
Designations. I think the intention is that we bring a paper to the Housing Management Advisory Board, making a recommendation, and then we will determine whether or not it needs to go through any further governance processes as well.
Because I'd hate that bungalow to be just a couple in there that don't need a ground floor or anything like that. So I think it still needs to have some sort of criteria on it. But if the age you haven't got, because that is what you said about St Michael's, and I couldn't quite understand why. You know, there's lots of 60 plus that would probably want to move, but they're well settled in their council house and don't want to move. So they're probably not. And when you get to a certain age, you want to stay in the area you're in. And all of these houses are in certain areas that they don't necessarily want to move to anyway. So I can understand it when you really think about it. But I still want to go back have your question been answered?
Well, that was, you asked a brilliant question there. So could, for clarification then, so are we saying, say for example, a 50-year-old that's been diagnosed with arthritis goes on Chalmers housing list, and they thought, I know there's a bungalow in Shelthorpe, they wouldn't be eligible. There's no waiver mechanism yet.
I think what I will do, I've got Katie Moore, the head of strategic housing. Are they, Katie, are you online at the moment? Yes. Did you hear Councillor Park? Thank you. Did you hear Councillor Park? Would you like to, if you could just repeat your query, please?
Yeah, Katie, so say for example, so we've got bungalows here, we've got a list here of bungalows, and it says general needs 60 plus. And in the final column it says insufficient demand due to age criteria. So let's say for example that a 40 or a 50 year old who's been diagnosed with a disability, degenerative disability, MS, rheumatoid arthritis, and they went to Charnwood for housing, and they knew, or someone said, oh, you want to apply for one of those bungalows, what waiver mechanism exists to be able to say, well, we could put person X, who's just come with this application, we could put them in this 60 plus bungalow, or is that not possible?
Yes, thank you. So at the moment, we have a choice-based letting system, and the way the system's set up, there are age restrictions on the adverts, so if people don't meet the age criteria, they cannot bid for the properties. However, when we do have lower demand properties, we have the facility to do direct matches, which we have done for a large number of these age-restricted properties over the last couple of years. So we have managed to directly allocate to people who don't quite meet the age criteria, but they would be suitable for those types of properties. So in some cases, like for example with sheltered accommodation, it's not just the age criteria that is the kind of qualification criteria for those schemes. We need to make sure that they have the lifestyle that would fit well with the other residents. So for example, we wouldn't allocate to a young person who has young children in a sheltered accommodation scheme because of the lifestyle clash. But where there is a similar lifestyle and there's just an age limit, we have been able to direct match in those kind of cases. I am aware that quite a lot of the bungalows that we do have at the moment that we are struggling to let, we have had some bids for them, but we have had refusals for a number of reasons. So some of it may be to do with gardens, to do with the fact that there's steps up to the front door, or very small rooms within the bungalow. So it's not just the age restriction that has led to those properties being hard to let, but there's quite a few things that we are looking at the moment to try to see what we can do to try and make these more easy to let. And part of that is the age criteria, but there are other things we're doing as well.
Thank you very much for that answer, Kate.
Because of course you can't put all the reasons down, so the age related. My question goes back to I've forgotten the words and I've read it so many times, waiting shortlist. So you've said 160 hours you've got extra.
We're total 102, I think, at the moment.
102
yeah.
hours,
yeah.
Which is just over two people.
Yeah, we're looking to recruit, we are recruiting to further.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And you've got 0.8 at the moment, which is half.
That was the position.
That was
and
it.
Now we've increased it to that, and the 102 okay. is what we've increased it to, and we're currently out for more.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I shall ask you the next time then that we have more. What I would like to see, if I'm going to invite you back in 3 months' time, yeah. I would like to see the same list, but crossed off. Especially of these, if that's possible, a waiting shortlist. These are quick wins. These are easy wins for you to get over. Mm. And with your 3.8 extra people on it and recruiting more, I would expect most of these to have gone off your list by then, because they are win-win. It's just an easy match, isn't it?
I think it will take a little bit of time to get those people trained,
yeah.
and get them allocating and get it.
But what do they have to do actually?
I'm gonna
sorry.
Over to Katie.
Katie, what to be trained? I've put in. I would like the first one on here that is ready to let, and it's in Syston East, and it's been advertised. It says, and it's a waiting shortlist. So, what has an officer got to do to put this on choice based lettings?
Okay, so with the majority of those properties, they have already been advertised and we have got a shortlist of bidders. So what the officer will need to do is review that shortlist and determine whether the property is suitable for those bidders. So they would review the shortlist in order of priority and go through to make sure that their circumstances are still the same and that the property is suitable for them. So we don't just kind of offer to whoever's first on the list. We do make sure that we do a full assessment to make sure it is a suitable offer. So not only is it suitable for the applicant, but also the applicant is suitable for the property as well and the area. So there are checks that do need to be carried out to make sure that we are doing that properly and appropriately in line with the allocations policy.
Right, okay. So all of these, somebody's bid on them? So we've got 50 people, 50 bidders waiting. They think that they've won somewhere. No, they've not been informed.
Katie, do you want to input on this one?
Yeah, so if we do have a shortlist of bidders, then we are contacting people when they are allocated a property, and if people do contact us to ask for updates on properties they've previously bid for, they are being advised that there are some delays at the moment and that we will contact them as soon as we have been able to make a decision about who the property is going to be offered to. So we are starting to make progress with the property allocations, and as Peter said, we have increased the resources already and we are looking to increase them further, so we are starting to make progress with getting those properties allocated.
Okay, thank you. So would that be possible for us to actually see, not just remove it from the list, but put it in red or something like that, that's been dealt with and it's now been allocated? Because I think visually we need to see that it is, because obviously this list will carry on being a long list because you rent and there's another one
that
could become empty.
There'll be more added on.
They'll all add on.
I guess your risk is your list will get bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yes.
But your red lines will go.
And that's what we want to see as councillors. We want to see visually that there is that progression and that amount of work being done. So 3 months, do you think that is a reasonable length of time?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think we'd like to, you know, my expectation would be we'll start to see a reduction.
Okay.
In voids over the 3 months, yeah.
Keith.
Thank you. Following on that point, thank you, Chair, the list doesn't need to grow forever, because after you've shown them the first time, the ones that have been allocated, you can delete them for the next one.
Yeah. Yeah, think of the trees. So, any more questions? No. Adrian.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just conscious that Councillor Charles said that Finance and Performance Scrutiny Committee are going to be reviewing this again in March.
Right.
Given that he still seems to be here, I just wonder if it's worth making sure that the two committees don't duplicate each other's work.
No, that's fine. And that is more of a performance thing that we're looking at. So I'm not quite sure what committee that would sit on under Mark. It coming back to view the performance.
Yeah, I think, hello Chair, sorry. Yeah, on that point, we have got it down for March. But again, you know, I have no issue with your committee looking into it. You are looking into this voids specifically, and we're looking into the performance of it. So, you know, I don't mind sharing the information, but as Pete Adrian has put, we don't want to sort of over-duplicate and use officers' time unnecessarily.
Maybe
we can have a look, and when we get some information to review, we can possibly see where it sits best.
Okay. As I say, with what I've just asked for, it's asking for the performance, and so which would sit more happily under yours, but we'll see about that at the time. I think that's a good call. Mark, is there anything else that you would like to ask at this moment?
No, the only one thing I was interested about that I don't think you've raised, and I think members have asked some very good questions tonight. It's been very interesting. What sort of time are these people that have applied for properties? How long are they currently having to wait before they get an answer as to whether they're going to be housed or not going to get that property?
If I could ask Katie to respond, please. Thank you.
Thank you. So it does depend very much on the individual property, because if we have a property that was advertised a couple of weeks ago but it became ready to let very quickly, they're likely to get a decision quite soon, whereas if it's a property that was advertised a long time ago but it's only not yet ready to let, so it is a bit of an interaction between how long ago they bid for it and when the property does become ready to let. So we are making sure that we try to prioritise the lets of the properties that are ready, so rather than allocating something that could be a few months before it's ready, so that people get a decision and they know they've been offered it but it's not ready yet, we are trying to kind of prioritise the work on the ones that are ready so that we can get those let more quickly. So it's quite difficult to say, really, the time frames.
But through you, Chair, I think that's obviously get the low-hanging fruit. That's a good policy. But are we communicating back to the people that are actually got bids in for these properties, what's actually ongoing and the timescales that they're expected before they will hear? So I just imagine that some people are sitting there thinking, I'd love to move into that house in Syston East, but have I been told what's happening? Have I told how long it's going to take? Where are the sort of residents in this? Thank you.
So, because we've got a very, very large number of applicants on the housing register and a lot of people have bid for these properties, but we don't have the resources at the moment to contact every single bidder and give them an update on the progress of the property. However, we are putting some messages out there to say that there are delays and that it may take longer than usual to allocate. And if people do contact us to ask for an update, we will explain that. It's just because we've got quite limited resources at the moment, we're trying to focus on getting the properties allocated and let as quickly as possible rather than going through the list and spending time contacting everyone. It's just because of the volume really of bidders that we have.
So if I could just ask, so if I bid for one and I'm at the number one spot and I know the number one spot I would have thought would get me that house, but apparently it doesn't, I've then got to go through the shortlist and whether I reach the criteria, but the public aren't really aware of that. They've got the number one spot, so as far as they're concerned, they've got that house or the flat or the property, and it's just a moment of waiting, but they know that the property is empty, not being worked on, it's something that they can move into. They don't know that I know they were number one, they know they were number one, that they're not They don't know that you've still got to go through this criteria. Or do they? Is it explained, even though you are bidder number one, is it explained that even that doesn't ensure that you will get the property?
Yes, we do try to explain to the customers that it's not just about the bidding position, because we do have to carry out additional checks. Just to give an example, if we have a property that's got a level access shower in it, then we try to prioritise the lets to the people that need the level access shower. So the first place bidder may not need that, but somebody who's fifth may need it. So that's the person that we're more likely to allocate the property to. So we do try to explain this to applicants when they first apply, when we're speaking to them throughout the process. And if anybody does contact us to say, I've bid for a property a few weeks ago, I don't know what's happening with it, we will kind of communicate to them that there are delays and explain to them the process around that as well.
But that must take an inordinate a length of time for people then to ring you up and ask whereabouts we are. And is there not some way you can automate that, the reply to them, although you're number one on the list, blah blah blah, and it must take a lot of time and a lot of explaining to do on your behalf, Katie, of explaining to people why they haven't got it.
We do have some information on our website, and we do try to signpost people to that information. So there's some frequently asked questions, for example, about how the registering policy works and how the allocation process works. And our customer services staff do have some guidance as well that they can give to people on that.
Yeah.
And try to explain in quite clear terms how the process works.
Okay. Thank you. I think. Thanks. Right. Are there any more questions on this? No? Councillor Mercer, is there anything you would like to say?
I hope I've satisfied your curiosity, and
I don't want you to belittle the committee, Councillor Mercer. Thank you very much. And it's not just to satisfy our curiosity; it's to find out why there are voids when we've got such a long waiting list. So I don't want you to belittle what the committee are doing or trying to get to. So thank you very much. Okay. Right. Thank you very much, Peter. Thank you very much indeed. Yes.
Did we have any resolutions on that, or is it just all recommendations such as further actions other than the...
I don't know. We'd like it to come back. We'd like the paperwork to... let us see, visualise what has come off the list, but not come off the list, because we still want to see it, if you know what I mean. Yeah. And I think that was all, wasn't it? Was there something else, Ted?
We were going to talk about KPIs, weren't we?
KPIs, yeah.
I can provide you with quite a good visual that shows total number of properties, total number in standard repair. Number,
I like
of
a good
repair.
Graph.
I can provide you with a graph that shows number of lines, and yeah. I think it would probably be quite insightful.
Yeah.
You'd be able to monitor and see at a glance what's going on.
Okay. And that would be good for KPIs as well, to be able to visualise the performance level. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Right, thank you very much, councillors that have appeared for this, to listen in into it. Thank you very much to Pete and to Councillor Massa.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Chair, can I just...
And Katie, sorry. Thank you.
Are we quiet?
Yes.
Oh, well, okay.
Just
okay.
I think Adrian would have pointed it out.
Yes, Adrian would have. Yes, Adrian.
Thank you.
Four. Is that what you were saying to me?
Four, Chair, and there are still four of you, I think, aren't there?
There are.
Yeah.
In the room.
Yes, and then Councillor Popley looking on. Councillor Popley, I've not, because we've not actually voted, so I've not asked you how you would vote, Councillor Popley, but. We know you're still there.
That's fine, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Right, so...
Sorry, Chair, I need to make a move now as well.
All right, Councillor Brooks, thank you very much for attending. I know you're on your sick bed, so thank you.
Thanks, bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you. If I may, I'll sign off now. Thank you very much for letting me attend. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Murphy had to go to a charity thing tonight, and I'd already spoken to him and that it was all right for him to go. So the next one is item 8, pre-decision scrutiny of any specific financial matters to be considered by the Cabinet, and there is none. Item 9, Cabinet items for pre-discussion scrutiny. Again, there are no items of this nature been identified. Item 10, pre-discussion decision scrutiny, Cabinet response, and there was none on there either. So item 11, progress with panel work. So the progress with panel work, the waste, has that come to a conclusion yet, Adrian?
It's going to Cabinet this week, I think, Chair.
It's going to Cabinet
on Thursday.
On Thursday. And do you know, at this moment, I can't remember the councillor that's chairing it. Is she presenting it to
Emma
Cabinet?
Ward.
Thank you very much, Peter.
Emma Ward.
Is Emma going to Cabinet to?
That's my understanding, Chair. Good. Is that the chair of the panel will go on to Cabinet to present the report.
Good. Thank you very much. We got one on loneliness, but that has not come to anything yet, and we said we'd put that off, didn't we?
We did.
For a while. And the tourism, because there's just not long been done something done, a review on tourism. Is that right, Adrian?
I can't remember the reasoning, Chair, but Councillor Brooks was looking after that one, and unfortunately he's just...
No, Councillor Brooks was IT, Popley. Was computer.
To Popley.
It was Councillor Popley.
Councillor Popley who was tourism.
Are you still on, Councillor Popley?
I am, Chair, yeah. That one we said we'd look at again in January, didn't we, after the pantomime season had finished.
Okay.
It was tourism and the arts, wasn't it? Completely.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I knew there was some reason.
The only thing I will say, Chair, is that all panels will need to conclude before the elections in May.
Yes. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Sorry, Adrian. I was thinking of maybe doing it from January to March, having three quite quick crisp meetings to keep it quite fresh and get it done before we go into election season.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So, can we leave that for you to arrange then, Councillor Popley, and put out invites for councillors to join the panel? Yes?
I think he's got his thumb up, Chair.
Is he?
Yeah, sorry, I'm having a bit of mare with the tech
All right, then. Thank you very much. So that's the progress with the panel work. We've got item 12, scrutiny work programme. Thank you, Adrian, if you could introduce
this. This is just for information for you to keep an eye on the work programme of the Finance and Performance Scrutiny Committee. Having had a quick look at it, they've got nothing specific scheduled on voids for their March meeting, so I'm assuming that they will just look at the key corporate performance indicator on void loss. So it may therefore make sense for you as Scrutiny Commission to have the detailed report at your March meeting. So your meeting will be on the 6th of March, and the Finance and Performance Scrutiny Committee meeting will meet on the 7th of March.
Okay. I would like it to come here. I would like it to come back to you. Thank you very much.
I think there will be no duplication, Chair, because it's not a specific item on the work programme of Finance and Performance, so they will just monitor it within the overall corporate performance report.
Okay. All right. Is that all right then? So it'll come back here for the 6th of March.
March meeting, yeah.
Thank you. And then the item 13 was scrutiny commission work programme. Again, we're very light on this.
So you've just added that item for the 6th of March to have an update on voids, Chair.
Yes, yeah, that's true.
You've also got the forward programme of key decisions, the items that are coming to Cabinet for you to select anything that may be coming up. The only thing I would say is there was one item scheduled for January Cabinet on the, I can't remember what it's called now, my
UK Shared
Bank.
Prosperity.
Yes, that item is now being deferred, so unless somebody else crops up, the January Cabinet meeting may actually end up being cancelled.
Okay. The only one I've got is, and again, I'm not quite sure what it is, it's the capital strategy, a treasury management strategy statements, and the minimum revenue provision policy and annual investment strategy. Whether that, because it's a strategy, would come to here.
It can come to here if you wish for it to, Chair. It's those are just the annual strategies setting out proposals for the forthcoming 12 months, and they all go on to full council. They go to Cabinet for recommendation on to full council.
Okay.
But if you wish to have a look at them as well on their way to Cabinet, you'll be perfectly entitled to do so. They're not probably as exciting as they sound on paper, though, Chair.
No, I'm sure that they're not. Strategies never are, really, are they? So, but we will have an updated key decisions come through. So at the moment, for January, have we got anything for January? No. And that means that the Cabinet will be probably cancelled for January as well.
Unless something crops up at the last minute, Chair, yes.
Okay, so at the moment we've got, we'll just look forward to February. And there's nothing to pick up, that's the general fund. And they would sit on another committee anyway. So if you could, when the key decision list comes through, if there's something on there that you think we need to scrutinise, or would benefit from scrutiny, will you please let Sally know and CC myself into it as well?
Okay.
Because I'm fed up of doing it on my own, because I might not have the same opinion as you. So she'll send you the key decisions, if you could pick something out from there, if needed. Okay.
Okay.
So, I think that concludes, does it, Adrian?
I think so, Chair, yeah, unless we've missed something.
Not that I can think on agenda.
So, at the moment, we say the next meeting will be the 9th of January, but there is nothing for discussion on the 9th of January, so that may well be cancelled. Yes?
That's at your discretion, Chair.
If there's nothing there, there's nothing there. We're not going to get blood out of a stone on there. So there's nothing even on it to discuss. So thank you very much for attending. Thank you very much, Adrian.
Thank you.
And happy Christmas. See you next year.
Thank you. Bye.